Welcome to the Land Jam Podcast, a semi-friendly discussion between two blokes on watches, cars, and everything in between. Now, here are your hosts, Tommy and Sanjeev.
Welcome to the Land Jam Podcast, episode 37, part two of our interview with Alistair of ATG Vintage.
This is a good segue into the book, Chasing Time. And it covers the watches that you have collected and has gone, went in and out of your collection and what. And it's certainly, you know, mainly catered towards chronographs and some dive watches. And frankly speaking, it's a fantastic book. It has covered a lot of brands that I have no clue they existed, whether they likely didn't survive the quartz crisis, but it captures the essence of like watches back in that era. There were a lot of unique design aesthetics, the use of color, and the purpose that it served. You know, it came very varied than maybe if I were to argue that you can get today.
The reason why I went with chronographs is because they were the best watches you could buy.
Right, because at that time, it served a purpose more than I wouldn't say, probably not the right word, but then you know, more than a gimmick than it is to, you know, today, you know, because we have other ways of timing. But back in the day. It was a purpose.
Yeah, I mean, what I was led by, I mean, I'm not a watchmaker.
Yeah.
I was led by my watchmakers, and they would say, great movement this. It's very well laid out. It's easy to work on. It's very accurate. And then I would go, oh, okay. And and then I would just follow, oh, well, you know, this is when I first started. And I would go, okay, well, what movement's that? And then you suddenly start realizing, you start piecing a picture together of who were the shit hot manufacturers of the time. Yeah. And whereas you think, oh, Rolex. But, you know, stories I know about Rolex aren't that smart. Yeah. You know, there's a lot, you know, they're notoriously not very accurate, the vintage ones. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean now, I mean they weren't accurate then. It's just the marketing was very, very good. And they were pretty good. They were as good as it got for what you're probably going to pay. Yeah. And the reason why I used, I mostly went with chronographs, was because they look great. And B, I was probably a bit of a snob, and I just thought, well, chronographs are as good as it gets. My watchmakers love the movements, and you know, and I know a lot about different chronograph movements and what's good and what's not. I mean, you know, chronomatic. You know, everyone goes on about, you know, the micro rotor movements, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
But my watchmaker would say, yeah, but it's a pain in the ass because if you want to service it, and you want to get into the to actually say you've got a slight problem with the rotor weight, it's inside the movement with a chronograph module on top, which doesn't come off in one piece.
Gotcha.
I see.
So the next minute, and you know, and he's dealing with like really sophisticated small elements of a movement.
Yeah.
And that's why those watches never took off. I mean, you know, I love the Hoyer guys. Don't hate me, Hoyer guys. This is just me, but I do get tired of no one. Because once watches start becoming well known and therefore valuable, you never hear any critical conversation about them.
Right.
And
right.
The bottom line is, why the fuck are the pushers on one side and the crown on the other?
Yeah.
Why is that? I mean, what it made that movement, because it was very tall, made them create these really groovy cases. And that's what's cool about those micro rosa watches.
Right.
And just how fucking cool the dials are. I mean, you know, they've got crazy bit of orange here and a bit of yellow there and influenced by F1 and all that kind of stuff. And it's really cool.
Yeah.
But there's a fucking real, you know, and then I bought an El Primero and it's like 50% shallower and in a normal shaped case. And not that there's, but it created, there was a difference. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So my whole, the reason why the essentially the reason why the mostly watches I work with, which I'm now curating another collection of vintage chronographs that I'm going to offer for sale in the next few months, is that they're just better. They're better made. The chronographs, manual wind chronographs, by the time the late 60s happened, they did not get any better. Just, it didn't get any better.
That's the peak of it. Gotcha.
Yeah, that's the peak, yeah. Yeah, and it wasn't a peak that was like up and down. It was just, that was it. They were hugely over-engineered for what they were doing.
Yeah.
And they're the best quality watches you can buy if you want to just go on quality, or, you know. And I was just going on, well, I just basically like that stuff.
Yeah.
You know the watch I'm wearing mostly at the moment.
I was going to ask.
Is
that an Aquastar?
It's an Aquastar Deep Star, yeah, modern.
Oh, wow. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah.
And that's Jason Heaton had one of those.
Yeah.
I think Jason had one of those. Yeah.
That's, you know, I've owned a few of the originals. In fact, I wore one to get married in.
Oh, wow.
Hmm.
You still have that one?
I got divorced.
Oh, no, okay.
You don't understand. Instagram suddenly kicked these watches worth maybe £800-900. And then suddenly they're like worth £4,000.
Yeah,
like,
it's crazy.
Where did that come from? I mean, that's just because, I mean, what happens, a lot of the blog dudes who realize that, well, actually, you can't make enough money from just talking about watches and advertising, we'll have to start selling watches. But actually, if we sell them at what they retail, general retail price online is, we won't make any money. So therefore we need to talk them up a lot. So we can sell them for £5,000 or £6,000. Oh, and by the way, here's a secret conversation about Universal that nobody knows about this brand. So I'm going to investigate it even more. And then I'm going to talk about them having bought a load of them. And then I'm going to sell a shitload of them.
Make your demand.
For £6,000, £7,000, £10,000. Well, who did that?
I don't know if we can drop names here.
Yeah, we can't.
Well, no, it's just boring because it'll come and go and they'll be gone and they're never really going to be around. They're not long-term. None of that business thing is long-term. It's short-term. Yeah. You make money and good for them and that's fine. But it's all kind of, it's a little bit stolen as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. But with the book itself, are the pictures and is that from your own pictures of the watches that you've sold?
Yeah.
Every
single watch, was restored by my team watchmakers who I had here.
Yeah.
So imagine there's some high street in the seventh biggest town or eighth biggest town in England, and I walk in with an Aquastar Valjoux 23, a Rolex 5508 Submariner, a Valjoux 72 something, and another one. And I go, can you service these? And they just literally went, I only worked on these watches at college. I've never actually seen them in real life. I'm like, well, anyway, here they are.
Yeah.
So, and then they would give them to me, and I'd say the original finish on this case was, it was polished on top and brushed on the side. And I'd give them a whole spec for the watches.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, and if they weren't good enough, I'd go, well, that's not really good enough, is it? And then, sorry, you didn't take the pushers out, did you? No, well, take the pushers. Well, we're in case they, because they couldn't get the parts, but I could get the parts. And I was like, well, fuck that. I want it all done properly. So all of my watches went out and they were all, you know, in great condition and worked brilliantly.
Right. And the text is from your actual listing for that watch as well when you try to sell it, as far as contact.
It was more text than that.
Yeah.
So when I went with the watch, there was about 500 words. It told a lot more about them, lots of tips about, you know, what you should look out for and all this kind of stuff. And what happened was the publishers, who were quite difficult to work with, to be honest, I don't think they were actually that great. Suddenly turned around to me and said, okay, you've got 500 words per watch and there's 120 watches. Can you cut them down to 300 each? And I was like, fucking hell, because these have been made over 10 years. They haven't been done in one go.
Yeah.
And they were like, and can you reshoot the watch this way? And I was like, do you not understand any of this?
They're gone.
They're gone. And this is what people say to me all the time. some tit did a review on Amazon about my book, saying this is the collection of some guy's watches, like it's on eBay.
No, kidding.
Fucking book. And the amount of, and the bad reviews I've had on Amazon are all about guys saying, I should have really read about this book before I bought it, because it doesn't turn out to be the book I thought it was going to be.
Oh my God.
And then I'm like, so you didn't read the review, but you're now going to give me a shit review. Do you know what I mean? So it's a bit clipped. I mean, I'm putting together another book, because the original book, the idea was to do 5 books of 100 watches.
Yeah.
And it would be like ATG1, ATG2, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
But unfortunately, it was a richer idea than the publisher had the brains for, to be honest. And I've had this, if they were listening to this, I've had this conversation with them.
Right.
And so I'm putting another one together. And I was like, yeah, I'll just put it together. But it took me 10 years, the other one.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean? And you think, oh, this. So I'm up to about, because I'll read the second book, I'll redo, they'll have the other 100, the original 120 in, but it'll have everything about them.
Oh, great.
And collect the tips and look out for this. And
so I can just return this one and just wait for the second one? I'm just kidding.
No, totally. Yeah.
No. But then he's gonna write a bad review. He's like, yeah, I can't believe this. I'm just
I feel like some words are missing.
How much did, hang on, let's have a conversation. How much that book cost you?
Sanj?
There was a deal on Amazon, to be frankly speaking. I was gonna get the book anyways, and I was shocked. It was like what, 20 something bucks?
Yeah. Okay. And how much money can you make from that book?
It's me.
Can you take that book onto eBay and make sure you don't lose money?
That'd be pretty tough. That'd be pretty tough with shipping.
So,
what's your favorite here, Alistair? If you had to pick one from your 120,
the thing is, this is such a cliche for me, right? And it's a terrible, terrible cliche.
I'm expecting some.
As much as a fucking expert on these watches that I'd like to think I am, I really liked the 5508 Submariner that I had.
Ah, okay.
I was gonna guess the Jungens Olympic 1974 manual wine chronograph. That's a very beautiful one.
Yeah, well, the one that they gave to you after 30 years of working in coal. On the back, I shot two of those. One of them had, it was a gift. I think it was 25 years of working for the German.
Yes, it was. Yes.
Yeah.
I love that. I just thought, what? Is that all you get?
Sorry you got black lung, but here's a watch.
Yeah. And now you can record your days and your retirement, and now you can't walk as far as you used to be able to. Yeah, no, that's a really cool. The thing is, because initially I was drawn to these things because they photographed really well, and it's the shots that sold things. I mean, I had guys' wives contact me saying, look, can I buy this watch for my husband? And women were always quite funny because they just phoned me. Guys would be like, back and forward emails, women said, fuck that. They just phone you. I want to buy this watch. And I go, okay, does he like it? And go, well, he keeps stroking the screen of his computer. He touched the watch, right? That's when you know you're onto a good thing.
Yeah.
So, maybe the 5508 Submariner, which is the no crown guards.
Yeah.
But largely for how it wears, because it's got it had an elasticated bracelet.
Okay.
And it's quite shallow.
Hmm.
So it was because all the watches I had were pretty big chronographs, and then I wore that. I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. I think that, but I think what I could live with would be, if you should read the article on Monochrome that I wrote about the 1675 GMT.
Yeah.
And I kind of changed the dial and everything. That's completely true, that story. That's a real story. And I built it around Percy Sledge's When a Man Loves a Woman. And they were like, why have you done that? And I was like, because it's funny. That's fantastic. That's the point. Otherwise, I just put a fucking manual up there and you can read that. Yeah, maybe a GMT 1675. But chronographs, because I'm nerdy enough to go, well, actually, there's a separation. There's chronographs and there's dive watches. And this is annoying because somebody jumped on this watch and talked it up, and now it's like $3,000, and it shouldn't be because it's a nightmare to service, is the Wackman triple date chronograph.
Oh, yes. I was going to, I think I was bookmarked that one. No, I did not. The one I was looking up was the Walkman Diver 1972 manual wind chronograph.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Oh,
that's
the triple date's a beauty. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a nightmare watch to have serviced because there's hardly anyone, because it's a grand complication. It's nearly a grand, it's not quite, but it's nearly a grand complication. Grand complication is that with moon phase and then you go onto alarms and stuff like that. But there's hardly anyone who can do that. It's going to cost you a lot of money. So when they go, oh yeah, it's $2,500, blah, 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 yeah, try and get it serviced. If you're going to have a real problem.
Yeah.
You're going to have to send it to like Vacher and Constantine to get it serviced.
Yeah. Oh, it is a beautiful watch.
But it's not for everybody. It's not for everybody because it's
not for everyone. I want to ask you your opinion on the Tissot Navigator chronographs, those vintage cushion case chronographs from the 70s. I see them all the time on eBay. What's your opinion of them as far as the model is concerned and the movement?
Well, it's good. Well, Tissot were bought out by Amiga, weren't they, in the sort of late 50s, I think. Don't quote me on that. It's in the book, but don't quote me on that either because there's been a lot of research since. The information's a guide because suddenly it's like, oh no, well, I think you're fine. And like nerds have gone right in there. But and there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. I am one myself, did operational engineering for television. It's about as nerdy as it gets.
We all are, yeah.
Yeah, no, they're good. I mean they're good. They use saying it depends. The auto one used like a variation of the Lemania, right?
I think so. Yeah. I haven't looked so closely. I've just noticed that a lot of them are always on sale and I'm just curious about them.
Well, I think what happens is someone who bought 20 of them.
Yeah.
Because his parents left him a $30,000. What do you guys do in the States where you have your grandparents take it out when you're born and then you get it when you're 20?
Or like a savings bond or something?
Yeah,
or
like a bond, yeah. Well, all those guys went and bought all those watches and then they went, these are going to be worth a fucking $1,000,000 by, and then they put them on eBay for like $4,000 each. I mean, honestly, and you go, okay, nobody's buying that watch for $4,000. Okay, well, let's wait another, like they've turned into the Italian guys in the early 2000s who just, it must be worth $25,000 because I'm like 18. I had a message sent to me on my Instagram. I had a chat with a guy and he was like, I bought your book, it's really cool, blah, blah, blah. And I said, that's cool. And he said, yeah. He said that you do know a lot about watches. And I went, yeah, well, you know. And then he goes, I started buying and trading watches on the internet when I was 14. So I've been doing it solidly for 10 years. So I know a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's cool. But, you know, if you bought one for me, my shit was like guaranteed for a year and I had a reputation. And what I'm finding is that all this, like, I don't buy the dealer, I buy the watch. Well, fuck that. Because if you buy the watch, I've never bought a watch that was in the condition that I was told it was.
Yeah.
I bought watches that someone had paid to have them serviced and had paperwork. And then I gave it to my watchmaker and he went, yeah, well, if you look here, see all that dirt? It hasn't been cleaned. So that hasn't been serviced. Yeah, and then I said to the guy, well, I always build a servicing into any watch that I sell anyway. So I wasn't worried. And I said, well, if I were you, I'd go back because that wasn't serviced. And he was like, well, that's not true. This is a very serious person. And I'm like, sure. Well, my very serious person has told me that wasn't serviced.
Yeah.
But they just won't buy it. And it's like this thing of like, you can open a watch. You don't have to be a watchmaker. You can buy a thing on that will measure the frequency of what it should be beating at. And you've got an adjustment on a watch, plus and minus, that you can just physically alter and get it running about right. And it'll be about right for about 3 months. You haven't serviced it though. And that's what all that level of collector are doing. And I'm speaking to collectors who bought my book and they go, what about it? And they'll ask me quite technical questions about watches. And I go, well, speak to your watchmaker. And they go, well, I haven't got one. And I'm like, okay, so how are you doing this then? Well, I know a lot of information's on the internet. Well, that's not the same as having a watchmaker.
Yeah, yeah.
Your watchmaker is like your priest when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And if you've got a good one, and you know, they don't have to be expensive. And you know, I've known my watchmaker for nearly 25 years. And we're not super mates or anything. It's kind of business. Yeah. But we have those kind of conversations, and that's what you need. You need a watchmaker.
You need someone. Yeah.
Yeah. I think.
Yeah, I also, actually. Yeah.
Carry on. I was going to jump in on something. Go on. No, carry on.
My neighbor is actually, works at a jewelry store. You know, I live outside Boston, and he was talking about servicing. He had a Captain Wilder from the 70s. So we started talking. Great guy. And he was talking about how few people in the area even are qualified to service Rolex watches. And he was like, there's literally in Boston, in the Boston area, there's one guy who Rolex respects and who will send parts and who's qualified to use a certain press. And he had to go to Switzerland to get certified. And he was like, it's insane. Like, it's like, there's just literally one guy. And if you go
being Rolex qualified is very serious.
Very serious. Yeah. And he was saying that, you know, if you go to any number of jewelry stores and big names, that I don't want to mention any big names on the podcast, but they would all basically send the watch to the same guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So like any price variation, I mean, it's really just the store's markup on the service. It's the same guy doing it at the end of the day. And he's got much work that's backed up on him. It's insane.
My guy
is
that guy here.
Really? I see.
Yeah.
And
so that's a good guy to know.
And I completely met him by accident.
How did you meet him? What's the story?
I just walked into his shop and said, this is a bit. It was like a shit shop in a little side street. And I went, can you service a watch? And he went, I can service that. And I went, okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Yeah. And then he did. And he talked me through when he'd done it. He talked me through. And I went, okay, you know what you're doing. Anyway, I'm doing this. And he was like, cool, let's do that. And then we did.
The rest is history.
And
I got him
accredited with Zenith and Tag Heuer. And, you know, and he got married. And then his new wife said, you don't need to work with these guys. You should work on Rolex only. And then I never worked with him again.
Wow. That's the end of that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. But his understudy, I was also kind of training. So he's the guy who I work with now.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And how many watches do you think you've done over your career? I mean, the number must be up there by now.
Well, first of all, career. That's very kind of you. Thank you very much.
I mean, at this stage, if you're writing books about it.
Yeah, you're writing books, you know? Selling watches. It's a career.
You're a pro at this stage. There's no way you can get yourself out.
Well, mea culpa. Thank you very much. a lot. Maybe 600.
Wow. So you got plenty of material for 2, 3, 4 more books, right? Shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, some of them I just came and went. And some of them didn't. You know, there are some watches you just can't shoot. I mean, I try to shoot the fuck out of some watches and you think, but it looks so good and you just can't get it. And if I couldn't get it, I just didn't put it in. Well, so it wasn't, my thing is not, I'm not from a sales background, which is basically I drop my trousers for anybody. It's like, well, sales is like that, right? It's just, you got to get it going.
Yeah.
You know? And if your sales are, selling major software or hardware solutions for massive companies, you're not really dropping your trousers. But you are a little bit sometimes. Do you know what I mean?
You get
further down the food chain. I mean, watches, they're in retail shops, in little stores, and it's very low compared to a corporate business model, which is what I was used to. And I'm sure you guys understand that as well. So you have to kind of learn that. My thing was just all about them looking good. Basically, I'm from a film background, so I'd be like, doesn't it look great? And people would go, you know, how much money are you making out of it? And I'd be going, well, I'm making this. And they were like, that doesn't seem like a lot for how good those photos are. And I'm like, yeah, but the market isn't there yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You gotta and then if you look at the pictures in these online places that are selling watches now, all the pictures are the same. They're all head on.
Yeah, flat.
Yeah.
Is there no style to any of it? Because that would mean they'd have to spend time and money doing it. And that's the sales thing.
Yeah.
That's why my pictures look like that. It's because I was interested in the pictures.
No, for sure. And it shows. I mean, honestly, I barely read the text. I just looked at the pictures and just like, I wish I had that. I wish I had that. I wish I had that.
Yeah. I know. But that's what I had to do because people, I was selling something to people I'd never met in countries sometimes I'd never been.
Yeah.
Of things they'd never seen and maybe weren't sure that they actually worked.
Yeah.
So that's how good those pictures were.
Yeah. No, for sure. It's all visual. Yeah.
Yeah. And when I spoke to the publisher, well, my pictures are good, but the watches are cool. You know, they're good choices.
Yeah.
But when I spoke to the publisher, I was like, you don't understand. These pictures sold the watches to people who weren't watch collectors. He went, that looks cool. He seemed like a cool guy. I trust him. I'll buy it. And they were like, oh, I'm not sure we can sell this book. And I was like,
it sells itself.
Yeah, the picture sells itself.
Well, when I used to use web guys, they'd be like, well, we'll put this thing in and it'll blow up the picture. Because they were trying to, you know, it's like web development in Britain has been like middle class fraud. Because they're all like, well, let's build it in Flash. And it's like, well, no, let's not. Because you can't link that to anything.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I can't charge you £60 an hour now. Yeah. Oh, well, let's do this with the picture. Well, why? The picture is amazing. So you don't need to do anything fucking weird with it. You know what I mean? They used to get really frustrated because I'd be like, yeah, just make the frame and I'll put the pictures in. And they were like, no, but let's not fucking do that. Let's, you know, the pictures are selling it. But you know what I mean? It was like,
yeah.
They were like, you don't get it. You don't get the web. And I'm like, yeah, I've come to the web from fucking real advertising. This is nonsense. Just the picture does it. Shut up. Yeah, so anyway, so the second book, which I haven't got a publisher for yet.
What's the timeline for that?
Oh, fuck. I don't know. Talking to publishers is pretty out there because they struggle. But I've got a couple of guys I can speak to. The problem is I've got most of the pictures done. I mean, I take shots, you know, of each of those watches. I probably take 25 and then I'd maybe cut down five.
Yeah.
So I'm going through files of, you know, individual watches that I've got 25 and I'm choosing five from each, blah, 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 blah. And then I'm adding things like advertising and little technical stuff, visual technical stuff that I've got. So I'm up to about 210 in terms of watches, including the ones that are already there. But they'll have watches that go with them.
Gotcha.
And you'll go, oh, that's where it came from. Because at the moment, it's very bang, 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 bang. You know, it's alphabetical. There was no help with the organization of that book. They basically just went, we've put your book together, sign off on it. That was pretty much what they did. So, and I'm halfway through writing the words because it's a lot of stuff, you know, 300-500 words per.
A lot of work.
So it's probably going to take the rest of this year. But then what we'll do is we'll do a kind of, like I sent free books out to all the major players.
Yeah.
And about 30% of them went, we'll promote it. And about 70% of them didn't do anything. They just kept the book.
Wow.
So, which I was like, shouldn't I have?
Say something.
Yeah. So what will happen with the second book is I'll just send you guys one and, you know, you'll just get it and it'll be like, have a talk about my book, will you? Because I think it's good. The thing is, the books aren't, they're good. Do you know what I mean? It's not like somebody's selling dog shit and you've got to fucking talk.
They sell themselves.
Yeah.
The watches, they sell themselves.
Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
We'll be honored to you know, read up the second book.
Loved it.
Alistair,
yeah, go on. Sorry.
Well, it's people that like it.
Yeah.
And get it. You guys obviously get it. You said that you just look through the pictures and, you know, I've had people say that, you know, they just look through it and then I'm going to go back and read through it. And I'm like, that's it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. You can't, shall I go? Ooh, I did something good. Do you know what I mean?
You did. Yeah. You did. Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's awesome. It's awesome. Well, Alistair, you know, where can people catch you? Like, I know, so you write at Monochrome. You have an Instagram account.
I don't write Monochrome anymore.
Oh, you don't? Okay, that column is no longer active.
No, that's just their thing. I was just just contributing to them. COVID put paid to that, I think, really.
I see.
But it's no big deal. It's just, I mean, I've written for lots of people. I've worked, you know, I've written for International Watch, and you know, it's largely about access, really. I mean, I've got all these pictures and all this information. Yeah. And if people want me to write for them, that's fine. But a lot of the blogs are very kind of formulaic how they work. So it's about views, it's about eyeballs, it's about, whereas I like writing, you know, I like going, yeah, but wouldn't this look really cool on the Jag? Not the cool one, the shit one. You know what I mean? I like, you know, that's what kind of interesting stories should be about. It's less journalism, more stories, you know what I mean? Yeah. So yeah, so I've got some Instagram. I've got the forum up and running again, which was a bit of a nightmare because it was so big, because it's never fallen off the forum. It goes all the way back to like 2004, I think.
And where can people find the forum?
Well, it's atgvintagewatches.com.
Okay.
So there's lots of bits and pieces there. There's some pictures missing because, you know, web guys, you go, can you transfer? They go, yeah. And then you get 404, you know, they didn't fucking do the links. And then you go, well, it'll cost you 10 grand to do the links. And you go, well, why don't you do it properly to begin with? So I've been putting the links back for lots of pictures and all that kind of stuff. But it's all there. I mean, there's everything you're ever going to want to know about everything you've ever seen. I mean, my original picture gallery that went with the forum had 12 million views.
Wow.
Wow, that's incredible. Wow.
It's incredible when all the advertising you can put on it was Chinese brides.
Think of all the happy marriages that you caused.
Yeah, and then handmade spoons from Peru was another one. Didn't know. This is before they got their shit together. I was like, what? And I was from that world, so it was driving me up the wall. You know, and there's a couple of posts. I've got a post there called, which, because we had like fighter pilots on the forum as well. And now every, you know, fighter pilots got their own forum, so you never hear from them again or any of those kind of, you know, separate.
They're in their own world now.
There's no crossovers, yeah.
That's awesome.
There's a great post there called The Ultimate Pilot Watch on my forum.
Oh, okay.
I think it's had like 190,000 views or something. Okay. And it's all the different, the cool, I'll have to go back now and see if there's any pictures missing and upload them. But it's got all the cool pilot watches historically that I've owned through and why they were good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of like a book in itself, really.
Yeah, actually, that's a good theme right there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's also the Instagram account, ATG_vintagewatches. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's just ATG watches, and Chasing ATG Time Watch. Book is the thing. The book's great.
Yeah.
Sanj and I
love it, you know.
Yeah, no, it's
every night I'm thumbing through this thing, you know, right before bed. I love it.
Yeah,
that's great.
Well, that's
it's gonna cause a bankruptcy in the future because it's the next thing I do is set up an alert on eBay and start looking for these things.
Well, I bet the first thing you did was you picked a few watches and looked them up and then went, oh shit, they're like 9 grand.
No, absolutely. Bloody hell, I mean, like, I can't afford this. I can't get this.
Yeah.
What can I get? Yeah.
You know. Well, what ones did you like? And I'll tell you how much they were when I first bought them.
I actually bookmarked them. Go ahead, Tommy.
Go on. I like the 6BB, you know, the LaMania 6BB, the 1967 chronograph, because I've got one of the reissue of the Newmark Fabulous Four, you know, which is just the quartz one, but it's got a similar look.
Fabulous What's that? Four. Yeah. the fucking Dirty Dozen.
You need a brand. Honestly, you need a name.
I can't tell you how many parts of the Dirty Dozen were available on eBay. Dials, hands, spare cases, case backs for like 10 years. All right.
Yeah.
So I doubt any of the Dirty Dozen. I think they're a bit more dirty than the Dirty Dozen.
Yeah, that one's my favorite. The 6BB.
The single, well, not the asymmetric case, but the one with the
single pusher, yeah.
The single pusher with the black dial.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's quite small, that watch.
Is it really in person?
Yeah. It's about, it's only about, it might be 38, but it kind of wears like a 36.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, are you talking about the 055-250s? I'm talking about the 67, which is the asymmetric.
Just picked up and showed to me. Yeah, that's an asymmetric case, which means...
Yeah, that's the one I like.
Carbon one side, yeah. Well, that's a very beautiful watch, isn't it?
Beautiful, yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah, for me, if I were to jump in here, it would be one of them. I picked three. Chronosport Astro Chrono Manual Y 1970. So
okay, that was £185.
Wow. it's a very, you know, technical looking, but yet the use of color, like on the 3 o'clock register with the blue and the red, you don't see that kind of stuff anymore.
No, well, they use that. They used a lot of, I mean, I've written a lot of the write-ups of, I'm going to have to look it up now. The write-ups in the book, I explain why, like, they use different colors and different,
Page 50.
And different hands.
Yeah, I mean, it. You know, we have to understand, back in the day, it definitely served a purpose from a visual point of view.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gorgeous. Oh yeah.
Gorgeous. Oh yeah. Sorry. I just hang on. It's not working. Anyway, that one, was like £185. Well, the thing is about what I did with also my pictures, that's what the watch looked like. So there would be the odd mark on the bezel.
Yeah.
That would not be a full scratch, but it'd be an indentation because they're aluminium. And at certain angles, you'd see it, but you generally didn't see it.
Yeah.
And when you take these pictures, they're like, you know, they're like 10 or 15 times bigger than the watch really is.
Yeah.
So what I would do is I would put the watch on my wrist and look at it from the angle that I'd shot it. And then I'd see, can you see that mark? And what I'd do is I'd just reduce it a bit.
Yeah.
Not to hide it. Just so that when you got it, you weren't surprised.
Right.
And, you know, do you know what I mean? Because I could, because I used Paintbox before Photoshop even existed. So I could completely change all these watches and make them look as if they were, you know, from the future. And it's very important for me that the pictures looked real. So I'd leave the general condition in. But some things that looked worse in pictures than actually really were, I'd turn them down. I wasn't hiding it. Yeah. But it would just make people go, there's a fucking scratch on that. Yeah, but when you get it, you wouldn't even notice it.
Right.
There was a lot of that.
Yeah, if you blow something up, you know, 5x, everything is visible.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just trying to be quite sympathetic and real, really, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So what else? So, yeah, that was £185. I bought that when I was on holiday with the children.
Oh, that's a great buy.
The other, where were you? the other ones we have already briefly talked about. I really do like the Youngins Olympic 1974 and the Walkman.
Yeah. They're just interesting looking watches. The thing about these watches is they're all kind of interesting looking.
Yeah. Absolutely, and that's the thing that I really liked about, I guess, let's say the generation of watches you cover, these chronographs, they're just so interesting to look at, whether it's the dial or the bezel, or even just like the registers themselves.
Yeah,
not just from a technical standpoint, but like just visually and the design. Yeah. I don't think it's gotten better since that, honestly.
No, it hasn't. I mean, and also there is also this thing where they brought in, well, let's polish it. Well, brushed stainless steel only remains brushed until you rub it against the sleeve of your sweater a lot, and then it becomes polished.
Yeah,
you know, this thing about stainless steel watches having to be polished just drives me up the wall. You know, the mirror polishing they would do on Breitlings.
Yeah,
that only lasts until you put it on your wrist.
Yeah,
and then it's gone as soon as if it's mirror finished. As soon as you brush that against the edge of a leather jacket or even a good cotton shirt, it'll scratch it.
Yeah.
He did that to get people to constantly be people to be obsessive about it being polished and to send it back to be repolished all the time. That's why they did it. Because why the fuck would you do that? Why would you want to wear a watch that's so shiny it'd be seen from space?
Yeah. And then any imperfection needs to be buffed out immediately.
Yeah. And I don't, and I'm a big encourager of people's mental health. I don't want someone, well, why is it scratched? Well, sometimes it is.
That's life. Yeah.
C'est la vie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, I bought several watches that have definitely been in like, well, I know one was shot off someone's wrist because there's no fucking way the guy survived whatever happened to the watch.
Holy mackerel.
Because they're both lugs were bent like that.
Oh, man.
There's no fucking way you survived. You know, because watches are only really designed for what we can survive.
Yeah, so, generally, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that's the idea, yeah. So, yeah. So what was the other one? So the 6BB one.
6BB, yeah. And I also really like, I mean, look, I'm a Speedmaster guy. So all the Speedmasters that you have, you know, I've just been salivating because there's something about vintage Speedmaster. You know, it's just the color of the loom, the way they age. I love it. So
Well, they're very pretty, but there's no reason why they're so expensive because they made literally 10 million of them. So I don't understand why Submariners are so expensive.
Yeah,
because they made something like 6 million of them, so they're not rare.
They can command a price. That's basically it.
I know, but I don't fucking know why. Because there's lots of them.
Yeah.
The most I would say, I guess, colorful for me would be the Memosail Regatta 1978.
Yeah, they're always battered. Those were all sailing watches are always knackered.
So because, they were basically used then.
Most of them were really used. The 6BB, which is the asymmetric case, which I'm not sure it is an asymmetric case, it's just how it's described, is a...
Nice, cheers.
Cheers.
Just so you know.
What do you got there? Is that a Sauvignon Blanc? What are you drinking?
Sauvignon Blanc. Tempranillo, Spanish.
Oh, nice. Very nice. It's a little early for me to have a drink. Otherwise, I'd be joining you.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I'm jealous.
Yeah, well, the asymmetric case watches are, they are so cool. Yeah. Just the shape is mad. I mean, the Speedmaster, you look at the Speedmaster, you look at it on the side, it's got that stupid bezel that stands up too high and there's all these ridges and there's big cuts in the case. And I remember looking at it thinking, it's not a very smooth design, but it's the fact that it's not very smooth is what's cool about it.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of interesting detail.
Yeah.
And I mean, I used to say to people, the best vintage watch you could buy is a Speedmaster or a Datejust or a Submariner.
Yeah.
But then they all became such a big deal and I never said it again.
Yeah, it's just
become, I mean, there's no reason why a Speedmaster should be expensive. The 80 Speedmasters had plastic clutches in them.
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody talks about that anymore, do they? They used to be like £400 cheaper because they had plastic clutches.
Yeah.
And then it started with the whole pre-moon 3-2-1 column wheel.
861,
1861. Well, there's a reason why they changed from column wheel to shuttle cam. It's because it's a much better movement. So why the fuck do you want to buy a column wheel?
Well, if you've got a lot of money to spare, you can buy one now, right? Straight from Omega.
Well, yeah. Well, exactly. And that's all new. And also what's new is Omega did a Mark II PVD covered Speedmaster. They did a new one.
A new one?
Yeah. Not long after about 3 or 4 years after we put them on the internet.
Yeah.
And when I did that and I showed up on the Omega forums, I got abused. You've ruined that watch. You've ruined it. That was a historical article. I was like, fuck
I'm
off.
Seeing it now.
150,000 versions of them.
Oh my gosh. Frankly,
it's just too hard to keep up. I mean,
yeah.
Like, if I could just get one Speedmaster, I'll just get one Speedmaster.
Yeah. I mean, the best Speedmaster is your standard 861 or 1861.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. Right here. Yeah.
That's it. And it's a bit of a pain in the ass because it's not really waterproof. And it's manual wind, and what to do, 42 hours or 46 hours or something like that, which 42, is fine.
Yeah, which is fine.
But it doesn't matter for us because we're not looking. The thing is, we're living in a different world now. Well, my phone wakes me up.
Yeah, not a clock or not a watch.
Not a clock or a watch. So, I mean, I totally get it. I mean, I think Speedies are, I mean, the history's cool, isn't it? They went to the moon, for fuck's sake.
Can't beat that.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
you can never beat that, honestly.
No. I mean, Submariners didn't go to the moon, though, right? You know what I mean?
No. neither did Fortis, and Sanchez a Fortis.
Damn it! It was used as a hammer.
Fortis are funny, though. Oh, is this? So who's the mad Fortis fan? Because
that's me.
Quite funny that you were like, can I say the watch that, you know, the brand you haven't mentioned? And I was like, here we go, another Seiko chat. And then you went Fortis, and I was like, oh, Fortis. Well, the thing
you corrected me, though, because they did not make chronographs, if I'm not mistaken, back in that time.
Well, they had a watch called the Marine Master.
Yes.
That is going to be in the new book. You got to remember, I had so many cool watches that I've shot because they're all cool. So when you go, oh, this didn't make it into the 120. Well, that's because I've got like 320.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it was like what I had available at the time. And there was a bit of a rush and all that. Honestly, people think that the amount of time that went into putting my book together was like 3 weeks.
Wow.
Like the actual conversation with the designers and stuff, they were like, here's the book, do you like it, da-da-da, sign off on it. And I was like, yeah, can you put the names, you put the universal names the wrong way around. Like, they didn't even fucking read any of it, they just dumped it in to some pre-existing thing
template, and they were done. But
I think only with Fortis, I think the only vintage Fortis I've seen are the Marine Master, which for the purposes of this conversation I can go. Just wait one sec. Background filters. Add image. Documents. Fortis.
This is the one that has a weird scale in the back. Is that the one?
I'm just pulling you up.
I mean, I've only seen the current lineup of them. The Marine, ooh, that is a beauty.
Oh wow, I haven't seen that one. Yeah.
Well, there's the reverse one. Well, that's the original one, but they redid it about 5 or 6 years ago. Sorry, it's in reverse because I just grabbed it. I didn't reverse it first.
No worries.
No worries.
We can see it.
Yeah, we can see it. They introduced it back like five, 6 years ago or something like that, and it's a bit. Way it's like super chunky, but this one is very sharp, I must say.
It's beautiful.
Well, the thing about these, there weren't many of them because Fortis weren't a big deal, so there weren't many vintage in the market to buy. And the reason why they're too chunky is because they end up going, well, it needs to be an automatic and it needs to have a date function. And the way a movement works, it's two plates with all the gears in between.
Right.
Well, then if you add a date function, that's another bit of height. And then you add the rotor weight, and then it makes it big, and then you have to make a big watch. Whereas I've been quite shocked at how many of them didn't just make the fucking original manual ones.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like...
And keep it
thinner. Nobody's fucking buying that to keep perfect time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I never got that. But I tell you, I've done it really well. Is the Aquastar has actually been done really well with the auto in it. Because they didn't put a date in it. And the original Aquastar is actually quite shallow and it's really light. It's like you do that kind of thing. I don't know whether you do that with your watches. You'll be walking around, you catch it on the door.
all the time.
All the time.
You just don't know you're wearing it. Yeah. And that's what I always found about the Aquastar, because it feels like a proper watch. So you're a bit more, wander around the house. Do you know what I mean?
Whereas
if you're wearing a 18 karat gold, brick pusher, Datejust, some fucking mega lightweight 40s watch, you're going to be careful. But you put that on and you think, oh, that's fine. And then you just catch it on everything. But I think they've done a really good job with that, actually. Yeah, the Aquastar and the there's a couple that have been done really well, I think.
Yeah. Oh, man, I really regret not getting the Aquastar reissue. It's
you'll get your chance.
Someone sent them on today on Instagram that I know for €2,300.
I'm still sourcing, I'm still trying to get my Dugina Hoyer Sport fixed here, so that's going to be another expense. So I'm out of the watch game for a little bit until that gets fixed.
Well, also, I think it was, I don't know, I mean, it's different with me because I know the guys who did the Aquastar, so it's kind of different for me. But you've got a Speedmaster, and I don't have one.
Well, you might have to get one.
Well, I might have to get one, but the thing is, I might have to get one. I have to sell a kidney to get one if I'm going to get one. I mean, at one stage, I bought 18 Speedmasters between 1967 and 1976. And they came on 1171 full-length service bracelets, serviced, and all the cases done, £700 each.
Oh my God.
Wow. That's.
What year was this? When are we talking about?
2007.
Oh, man.
That's not even that far. Oh, man. I really should have gotten into watches earlier.
I knew a guy.
Yeah.
Who had the contract from the Japanese pawnbrokers, because pawnbroking is a big deal in Japan, especially to watches. So what they'll do is, what's the cool watch they have this year? Right, I'll wear that. I'll take a $300 loss over the year and then I'll go for the next thing. Well, then those guys were like, shit, we've got all these Speedmasters we've got to get rid of. Yeah. And what they did was he had the contract for it. So I could literally call him and say, I need, I ended up with 18 and they were between 68 and 76.
Wow.
And they just, they were all done, but they were done really, but I still could only really guarantee them using my own watchmaker. So then they were all done again. And then they went to Bamford.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, Alistair, as we sign off, I think Sanj and I would like you to keep us in mind if you get any more vintage Speedmasters for a really good price to kind of clue us in.
But you're probably more likely to do it than me these days.
Yeah, take those risks, but this was fantastic.
Yeah, this was fantastic. A whole variety of tour discussion and bashing and just laughs.
Well, there's an amazing story attached to those Speedmasters, which I can tell you, but I can't tell you on the podcast.
Okay, we'll do it offline. But we love this, and thank you so much for coming on. And
yes, we really do appreciate it.
Chasing Time. By all means, please go check out the book. We're looking forward to volume 2, and we need to do this again. On that note, all right. Well, thanks again for joining us for another episode of the Land Jam podcast. If you haven't, please subscribe. If you could do us a favor, please give us a review and a rating on iTunes. It really kind of helps the podcast. And give us a follow on Twitter and Instagram. And thanks for joining.